I really struggle with like how to address aesthetics in the suit. Much respect to SpaceX, their suit is very tight fitting and that will restrict mobility. It's cool, but it's going to mean their astronauts won't be able to move that much when there's an emergency.
Hello, my name is Ray Pauletta, senior editor at Inverse.com, and you are listening to I Need My Space, the podcast that explores the infinite questions of our universe with distinguished experts and enthusiasts within the space community. Today's guest is Ted Southern. Ted is the president of Final Frontier Design, a startup company that builds and tests spacesuits. Prior to getting into aerospace, Ted worked as a costume designer for Victoria's Secret and Cirque du Soleil. He joins me to talk about his work designing spacesuits. This is I Need My Space. Remember, if you like the show, we'd greatly appreciate it if you could rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts so that we can continue to educate the world about the universe one big question at a time. Welcome, Ted.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
We like to ask our guests some kind of warm-up fun stuff. We play a game called Best Planet, Worst Planet, and then we ask you what message you'd beam off into the void in something we call space transmission. So, Ted, what's the best planet in your opinion?
I'm allowed to say Earth, right?
No, you can. You can.
I think that we are pretty lucky to have this incredible planet that has an active core that gives us radiation shielding, allows us to have an atmosphere, and shields us from intergalactic rays and solar rays.
Always a good thing, not be zapped to death. It's good to have.
I think if I were to pick an unmanned planet or unhumaned planet, Mars is very interesting. Maybe that's like the boring answer, but it does seem to be the next best thing here in our solar system.
Since Mars is quickly becoming, obviously, the center of everyone's interest with Elon Musk and people like, the folks at Mars One, other private space entities, what do you think is going to be the first brand on Mars?
Is there already a brand on Mars? Do you count NASA?
I'm talking like a mall, basically. Like, what entity will be there first?
That's an interesting question. I don't know. Branded oxygen?
So, like, Abercrombie and Fitch, oxygen.
O2.
Yeah, who knows, And then what would you say is the worst planet? So maybe like not the worst, but the one you're the least interested in.
I'm a little bit hesitant to answer that question. I've been burned before by press asking me like favorite supermodel and least favorite supermodel. So I won't think of it like that. I think that Jupiter gets a lot of scientific interest because of the Jovian moons. Mm-hmm. And I think there's huge problems with tidal forces and radiation around Jupiter that people don't really appreciate. I'll choose Jupiter as far as like the most complicated and inaccessible.
Finally, your space transmission. So if you could send one message off into space, what would it be?
I think of myself as a starry-eyed idealist. I really think that our exploration and interest in space is inspiring because it's allowed us to cooperate as countries throughout the Earth. And so I think it would have to be one of unity as a species and goodwill from mankind. I just saw a meme recently on social media that talked about the alien response to that, which is essentially like quit sending us nude pictures of yourself and how to find you.
Like you up at aliens, you up.
No more nudes.
Yeah, please stop. So let's talk about not naked aliens, but still very interesting stuff. Let's talk about radiation. A new study came out from the University of New Hampshire that said that galactic cosmic rays are even worse of a threat than we thought, especially for some of these long duration missions, like to the ones that people were making to Mars, asteroids, and beyond. How do you think that radiation is going to impact long duration spaceflight?
It will definitely be a problem. I think that it's a solvable problem. Most of the time when human beings are being transported long distances in space, they're going to be inside a vehicle. Mm-hmm. And there will be space weather forecasting capabilities and radiometers, dosiometers on board. And so they will likely have some safe place to go to in case that happens. Space radiation is funny. It's a little different than Earth radiation. We're used to shielding on Earth using thick layers of lead or something really heavy,
right,
like tungsten. In space, it's non-intuitive what works well to shield us. Galactic cosmic rays are particularly heavy and high power, and if we just use lead to shield from those high power, high energy particles, it would create a whole bunch of secondary particles that would make it almost worse for our system.
And some of the ways that you're coming up with solutions is obviously in your work with designing spacesuits. So can you just go over a bit about what Final Frontier Design does and what the mission is?
So we make spacesuits. We started
casual.
Off...
Yeah. Same.
Yeah. We started off specifically with gloves. That's how we got our start as a company, but quickly started making the entire suit. My business partner, Nikolai, has a long history of this. He worked in Russia at Zvezda, the Russian spacesuit company, mm-hmm. for almost 20 years. He came to the table with a great deal of knowledge about some of the basics of how to put these things together. As a step back, I always have to give this introduction, assuming no knowledge about spacesuits, that there are two kinds of spacesuits. An IVA suit, or intravehicular activity, so that's mm-hmm. one you wear during launch and reentry,
right.
engine burn. Inside a vehicle. And that is a lot like the oxygen mask that falls from above on a commercial airliner. In case you lose cabin pressure, you have this backup atmosphere surrounding you. That's really the primary purpose of an IVA suit.
Sure.
So normally it's not pressurized, and there's not a great deal of focus on mobility or high differential pressure scenarios with an IVA suit. So the other kind of suit is an EVA suit, extravehicular activity. That's the one where you actually leave the vehicle and go spacewalking or walk around on a planet.
Mm-hmm.
Those are drastically more complicated. Monetary figures for NASA are hard to pin down, but the estimates are something like $300,000 for an IVA suit.
Oh, wow.
$15 million for an EVA suit.
$15 million. Wow.
15, yeah. So just in cost alone, they're much more complicated. The EVA suits are much more complicated. I mention this because we as a company have done a lot of contracting with NASA specifically for EVA suit components, gloves, elbows, shoulders, radiation shielding for spacesuits. But in our commercial facing side, we have kind of marketed or pushed a IVA suit. We've kind of bootstrapped an IVA suit specifically for the commercial world. We're now on our 9th version of that IVA suit, mm-hmm. and very close to essentially being flight ready. Long term, we hope to infiltrate the EVA market,
sure.
to be providing EVA suits, but it's a very long game. We've only been at it for 8 years. You know, we need another 8 probably to get to orbit with an EVA spacesuit.
Do you reach out to private space companies like, for example, SpaceX or Blue Origin?
Absolutely, yeah. They would be prime customer for us.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago, I think it was 2012, we responded to SpaceX's RFP, request for proposal for IVA suits for the Commercial Crew Program, mm-hmm. with NASA. At that point, we're very young as a company.
Sure.
We had a small studio in the Gowanus area, Brooklyn, and it was sort of an artist share with like 3/4 walls and a shared wood shop. And one of their astronauts, Garrett Reisman, came by to visit us and walked him through the wood shop. It felt a little bit inadequate at that point. So, you know, it's a long maturing process. It's been, I think, really challenging for us to convince companies like SpaceX or Boeing or Blue Origin that we are real, that what we're doing is valuable and serious. For a long time, I had to kind of fight the DIY label in press and just in general. So that especially at the beginning was kind of an uphill battle. We essentially were, you know, two guys in a garage trying to take on the military industrial complex. But yes, absolutely, we have contacts at both Blue Origin and SpaceX, and I would, you know, be very interested in talking with them more.
So let's just talk about quickly why you pivoted from costume design to spacesuits, because it seems like a big jump, but it also seems like there's a lot in common there, oddly.
Absolutely, there's a lot in common. It seems like a very subtle difference, but I always have to point out that I was a fabricator in the mm-hmm. costume world and not a designer.
Mm-hmm.
I never, you know, what I would do is I would get a drawing from a designer and turn it into 3 dimensions.
Right.
So it's almost like a translator and executor of designs. And that process introduced me to a lot of different things. It wasn't just costumes. It was really like special effects, props, costumes, mm-hmm. the kind of the works.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really exciting job. Every day was something new. Design and make windows for Saks Fifth Avenue and movies and TV and opera and Broadway. And so it was like a dream job for a long time. But there wasn't a great deal of credit for like the work that I was doing.
Yeah.
The pay grade was pretty low, long hours, and it didn't feel like I was making a difference. Some of the jobs got kind of depressing where you would put a lot of time and money into like a weekend event and then everything would get thrown away. Mm-hmm. I just kind of naturally got more and more interested in the human body and building things that could help us do more, extend the ability of the human body became sort of my catchphrase. So yeah, the transition, I think it raises some eyebrows that, you know, I used to work in costuming and now I make spacesuits, but I see it as like a perfectly natural one. And in fact, there are costumes out there that people's lives are on the line for and that have to work perfectly 8 performances a week ad infinitum. Mm-hmm. Cirque du Soleil is a great example of that. They just had a tragedy in Tampa where they lost one of their acrobats on an accident. Mm-hmm. We still make costumes for Cirque du Soleil. They're inflatable wolves for the Michael Jackson show in Las Vegas. The interesting factoid there is that those costumes have to inflate and remain hard inflated for about 20 minutes on stage with just a single air source. So the leak rate is very low. It has to be something like 50 cubic centimeters a minute or mm-hmm. less. For our IVA suit, that's what they call an open loop. So the air goes in and then it's just blown out at about 4 cubic feet per minute. So the leak rate for Cirque du Soleil, the requirement leak rate for Cirque du Soleil is much lower than one for like a IVA spacesuit.
That is a fact you don't hear every day. I definitely can see also with just the way that kind of fashion and costume design and space have been so intertwined for so many years, I guess, in media. Like, you just think about the way that spacesuits, even in movies, change over time. Like, the way that a spacesuit might have looked in 2001 A Space Odyssey looks different than the way it looked in Gravity. Do you find that you're ever pulling inspiration from media?
In a very limited way, yes. I have found an obligation working in this industry to become much more familiar with sci-fi, to read a lot more sci-fi. It wasn't an interest of mine until I got into this world, but mm-hmm. it's inspiring. And people have done a lot of heavy thinking about our future as a species in space in that realm. I can't say that we've drawn inspiration specifically from movie designs, but you mentioned Gravity. Mm-hmm. Gravity is a particularly interesting example because really they were just recreating suits that already exist.
Yes.
The EMU, the ACES suit, and the Sokol. And at the end, here's my note, my takeaway from Gravity. At the end, Sandra Bullock is in the Soyuz vehicle. She's wearing a Russian Sokol suit. It looks great. One of the reasons it looks great is because it has hips. That mm-hmm. spacesuit, that Sokol suit has some hips. A normal spacesuit is just like a cylinder.
Yeah.
Hollywood has a lot more focus on aesthetics and a lot more budget, actually, to think about how things look.
Let's talk a bit about the Astronaut Glove Challenge.
The Centennial Challenges program is part of a larger effort of NASA's Innovative Partnerships program. It's designed to tap into innovative thinking from small teams and individuals the agency might not attract through traditional procurement methods.
How did that help your career into space and spacesuit design?
I think it's a really great story. The Astronaut Glove Competition is part of NASA's Centennial Challenges. It's a citizen inventor prize group where NASA has thrown out specific technical goals to meet. The Astronaut Glove Competition in particular was a huge stepping stone for us as a company. NASA set out this prize money and we were able to beat some specific technical challenges under it, and they gave us some money for that.
Nice.
And that very easily could have been the end of the story. Mm-hmm. You know, the novelty check, shake your hand, great job, talk to you later. That's not at all what happened. And I think that's really where it gets interesting is NASA first invited us to Washington, D.C., to headquarters, where we got to meet Charlie Bolden, the administrator at the time, and some other prize winners from other challenges. And then in D.C., they actually invited us to Houston to meet spacesuit engineers. That was maybe 6 or 7 months after the competition. We'd kept working on our design and our materials in particular. To get to travel to Houston, to get to talk to the people who are actually working on this, and to get encouragement from them to actually apply for contracting from NASA was something that they didn't have to do. And I think it shows a great deal of openness and willingness to work outside of their generally restrictive bounds to encourage us to that point. So that's really when we started the company. It was not after the prize money, but after we went to Houston and heard from their engineers that they were interested in what we were doing.
How would you characterize the aesthetic of your spacesuits as opposed to other ones?
I've really struggled with this question or with this concept of the aesthetic of the spacesuit. The best spacesuits are all about functionality. Mm-hmm. Their aesthetic is the classic form follows function. For our suit, we have focused on its functionality. Mm-hmm. That's really been our prime goal. Mobility, low torque, range of motion, dexterity, tactility, comfort, user interface, whatever safety necessities are part of the system. There's not a lot of room for zhuzhing after that, you know? So I really struggle with like how to address aesthetics in the suit. Much respect to SpaceX, their suit is very tight fitting.
Yes.
And that will restrict mobility.
It definitely looks like something from a Daft Punk show.
Mm-hmm. It's cool. I'm
cool
psyched
looking,
to see it.
Yeah.
It's a new look for a spacesuit, but it's going to mean their astronauts won't be able to move that much when there's an emergency.
How do you think that kind of mentality about functionality is going to come into play when we think about things like space tourism? Maybe there will be more emphasis on aesthetics because they're not really trained astronauts and they want it to be flashy.
I don't know. You know, there's a great saying years ago that when the Mercury 7 walked in the room, they were the best dressed people in the room. Spacesuits have always been cool looking. They're always iconic. If you go to the website for the International Space Station, you don't see the space station. You see a spacesuit helmet. The look inherently is cool. Not necessarily slimming, but it's cool. To answer your question, it's already happening. Mm-hmm. The flight suits for Virgin Galactic, even though they're not pressure suits.
When it comes to a flight suit, it should be comfortable to wear. If it also looks good, then that's definitely a bonus.
The DNA flight was so powerful to everybody in the team immediately. This sense of Virgin Galactic continuing mankind's journey to discover how to travel and also how to broaden our horizons on Earth and potentially beyond.
So Adidas is working with Virgin.
Yes.
I think they're black.
Yes.
Which is terrible for visibility. And I have all kinds of questions about their safety parameters for
Virgin
flights. A lot of suborbital companies, Virgin, Worldview, Blue Origin, mm-hmm. want to send people suborbital up to nearly the Kármán line, you know, 300,000 feet or more mm-hmm. without pressure suits. And I think that's crazy. I mean, I think most sane pilots wouldn't go above 50,000 feet without some kind of additional pressure redundancy than a mask.
And why do you think they don't want to give them any additional protection?
It costs money. It's weight, complexity. There's a complex cost-benefit analysis going on there and risk analysis. And they also have no rules. You know, the FAA is mandated by Congress not to impose rules, but only recommendations on the industry. So they don't have to.
Right.
But if ever there was a lesson learned from the Air Force, from NASA, from Russia, it's that spacesuits are a requirement in space travel. Before Challenger, NASA didn't have pressure suits in shuttle. The crew survival report for Challenger said that they lost consciousness from hypoxia at like 70,000 feet and were killed by impact from the water. So after Challenger, they started using pressure suits inside the shuttle.
Sure.
Same thing happened in Russia with the Soyuz. After one of the first Salyut missions, they lost three cosmonauts from a leaky valve on reentry. The capsule landed safely in Kazakhstan, but they had three dead cosmonauts. And ever since then, they've had pressure suits. So mm-hmm. it seems like a pretty major takeaway, but it's also recognizably complex, expensive, heavy. But on the other hand, this is like my soapbox here.
No,
but
this is good. Go in.
hear me out. The Virgin Galactic flight, for example, mm-hmm. is an hour long, maybe less.
Yeah.
And they're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars for that 1 hour long. Wouldn't you want to spend more time training and have an excuse to try on cool stuff and look like an astronaut? And it just seems like such an obvious experiential gain for any one of those systems or experiences, in addition to adding a level of safety to the mission that I would think people would want.
You'd think that people would like that, you know? You think that when you get shot into space, you want a little security, but, you know, teach their own.
Right.
Now that we've talked about kind of the ways that functionality is key and that you need something that's going to protect you literally in the cold, dark vacuum of space, where do you see there's like some kind of potential meeting of fashion and space? Like, do you think that there will ever be a successful union of those two things?
Yes, yes, there will. As a company, it's pretty challenging to stay alive making spacesuits. We've picked maybe the smallest possible market ever. We have tried to find ways to spin off our technologies in other relevant industries. One of the obvious ones is personal protective equipment for firefighters, for electrical linesmen, for first responders, that kind of thing. And I think, you know, we're making inroads. There's some results there. We've also, we have some compression pants that have been particularly useful in the medical industry for people with orthostatic intolerance and POTS syndrome, things like that. But we're interested in that spin-off world. And one of the more exciting projects we're working on now has to do with not spacesuits, which are worn in high risk times during the mission, but just the clothes they wear in space.
Mm-hmm.
This is a big problem for, like, from the logistical side for NASA right now in low Earth orbit. There's no washing machine.
Yes. That's a big one.
So they wear their clothes in space and then they have to throw them away. After a couple days, 3 days, 4 days, they actually put them in trash and they get burnt up on reentry. Now, price per pound to orbit is going way down, and that's a good thing for the whole industry. But if you figure prices on shuttle were maybe $20,000 per pound to orbit, that's like a $10,000 t-shirt that you're just throwing away. In addition to the cost, it's a really limited volume that goes up there. And so logistically, NASA has to think about the science payloads, the critical life support consumables, food, and then a t-shirt, right? It just seems so dumb that they spent so much time and money on this. So we're really excited about thinking about ways to create a material life cycle for clothing in space. Be able to melt down or somehow recycle the fiber and recreate a new garment. We have a project called Knit in Space. We've partnered with a company called Stole, which is one of the larger knitting machine factories knitting machine makers in the world. They have some really exciting computerized machines that essentially allow an entire garment to come off the knitting machine with pockets and, you know, everything involved and essentially zero waste. So they just kind of cut away maybe 4 or 5 threads and then there's your pants.
Oh my God, the future is wild.
Yeah, it's amazing. But in that concept, if you have a monomer knit fiber, there's no stretch, there's no Lycra, that's going to dictate some of the architecture of the garment.
Mm-hmm.
So for instance, normally you have a waistband that keeps your pants up, but if you can't have elastic there, you're going to have a much higher waistband.
Never would know
inter
that's the
fashion,
best look.
Right? Like I really think that that's going to drive, again, form following function. I think that the necessity of things like recycling your clothes are going to force particular unexpected fashion looks that that are cool and can be cool. You know, trends happen for a variety of reasons. And I think that things like that will drive aesthetics.
Totally. Like a fanny pack almost. Like if you need to carry things around in front of you, like a koala mom carrying a baby koala, fashion, right?
Yeah.
It's like the same thing. Speaking about fashion and space, though, I do find it interesting that right now we're in a moment where fashion here on Earth is very much tied to at least the NASA aesthetic. Like Coach, I'm seeing, seems to have partnered with NASA for a lot of their materials. I'm seeing a few other brands that have put out kind of spaceship-themed collections, like spaceships on their t-shirts and spaceships on their bags and things.
Do you think Chanel and Burton, that was a big one for the Winter Olympics. All of the skiers were dressed in EMUs.
Right? So from your perspective, you know, why do you think this is happening right now?
Because space is happening right now. I think that we are entering into a new era in the United States in particular, where we haven't had human spaceflight capability for a while, since Shuttle was retired, I guess, 2012. We're not used to that as a country. I think for the last 50 years or so, we've led in this space world, or at least been one of the leaders. And so to be so dependent on Russia, I think people lose track of what NASA is doing at all. I remember, I don't think it's quite so much happening now, but I remember early on as a company, when Shuttle was retired, people would ask me, wasn't NASA canceled? I'm like, nope, they still get $17 billion a year. You know, there's still canceled. A thing. They do a lot of stuff, but a lot of it is behind the scenes or not necessarily, it doesn't necessarily capture the public eye because it's not a human mission, right, or it's not space sometimes. You know, they are the Aeronautics Administration as well. So things like the winglets on commercial airliners are NASA invention, but people don't really care or hear
they're
about
like,
it.
No, space. Right. Your space. Yeah, exactly. That's it.
The promise of a new human vehicle or three new human vehicles that are launching from the U.S. is really exciting. Watching companies like SpaceX, like Blue Origin, like Virgin Galactic follow through on launch tests is really inspiring and exciting. And I think for that reason, it's just more part of the gestalt than it was for a while.
That's a lot of fun, though, to think about. There's just a lot of really cool things in space happening right now. And it's interesting to see how fashion will follow that. Ted, thank you so much for joining us. How can people online find you and your company?
Sure. You can check us out on the web at finalfrontierdesign.com. In particular, you should look for our spacesuit experience, where you can come by our studio and put on a real spacesuit. Also, you can find us on Facebook. We're out there in the world.
And in the universe. Awesome. Thank you so much, Ted.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
If I'm going to space, I want to look good as hell. What does your ideal spacesuit look like? Let us know by using our hashtag #IneedMySpace on Twitter. Don't forget to follow I Need My Space on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at @IneedMySpacePod. All that along with info about where you can follow Final Frontier Design will be available in the description for this episode. If you enjoyed the show and want to let the universe know about us, we'd greatly appreciate it if you could rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes, so we can continue to help educate folks about one big space question at a time. I Need My Space is an Inverse production hosted by Ray Pauletta and Steve Ward, produced by Sam Riddell, and executive produced by Hannah Margaret Allen. Our lovely intro and outro music was created by Andrew Oliveras.